This is Let's Talk MS, the podcast of youth living with MS.
Let's Talk MS!
Welcome to Let's Talk MS, a podcast series created by Young Minds for Young Minds and proudly brought to you by the European Multiple Sclerosis Platform. I'm Anna.
And I'm Elizabeth.
And we will be your host for today.
In this podcast series, we're about to unpack the intricacies of living life as a young adult while navigating the challenges that come with multiple sclerosis, MS. From dating to nutrition to dealing with the MS stigma, we're here to navigate it all through expert insight and personal stories.
Today, we will be talking about stigma and discrimination. And for this episode, we are welcoming Elizabeth Cunningham, Senior Communications Manager at the European Federation of Neurological Associations, also known as EFNA. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me.
And we are happy to welcome back Emma Rogan, Brain Health Advocate, who was with EMSP for more than a decade, and also leading the YPN, the Young People's Network. So welcome back, Emma.
Oh, it's so good to be here. So good to see you all. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
So today, the topic of the day is overcoming stigma and discrimination while you are living with a condition like MS. And according to the World Health Organization, stigma is a major cause of discrimination and exclusion. It affects people's self-esteem. It contributes to disrupt their family relationships and limit their ability to socialize and obtain housing and jobs. And so we are happy to welcome today experts that will help us to understand better how we can overcome those challenges and address those questions. And I will start with a question to Elizabeth, my counterpart here, to ask you, because EFNA has been doing a survey, a very important survey, and what was the discoveries through that survey? What were the most common forms of stigma and discrimination faced by the people living with MS or similar conditions that can be highlighted?
So we ran this survey in 2020, and it was open to people across Europe affected by any neurological condition. The reason that we decided to run the survey was because of a previous survey that we had run in 2018. That survey targeted specifically young people affected by neurological conditions, so people who were under the age of 35. And in that survey, we wanted to explore the biggest issues, the biggest problems affecting people who live with neurological conditions. And in that, we found the biggest issue was access to medication and treatment. But the second biggest issue was isolation. And the third biggest issue was stigma. So following on from that, we felt that stigma really was an area that we needed to focus on. Because, of course, while isolation was the second biggest, isolation is in large part caused by the stigma that people are affected by. So then in 2020, we went on to do this survey specifically on stigma. And the overwhelming key finding from that was that 92% of people who live with a neurological condition do feel affected by stigma. But specifically from the responses that came from the MS community, 87% of those responders reported that they feel affected by stigma. Within that, 63% say that they feel somewhat affected, affected to an extent, but 24% of people feel very affected by stigma. And then looking at the main causes of that, again, from within the MS community, the primary cause was the invisible nature of the condition. Of course, it's not always an invisible condition, but for some, it could be seen as invisible. The second cause was general lack of understanding. And the third was myths and misconceptions around the condition. And then we looked at the most problematic areas of life on account of that stigma. And the number one area that causes problems is employment. The second is in interaction with the public. And the third was in romantic relationships. I have more information and details from that survey, but don't know whether you want me to go into those now or whether we'll get to different areas during our conversation.
Well, we'll get to the different conditions later on in terms of how the visible condition, invisible conditions. But just to go back to what you just mentioned here, in terms of the different cause of stigma, I think it's really important to understand that the stigma comes from different roots. And this is not necessarily only caused by the way that people are understanding the disease. There are other approaches that are other causes to the stigma. And it would be nice to understand better, maybe from the exchange you might have had with different patients also, how did they overcome or try to understand the cause of the stigma so they can overcome it?
The stigma is affecting them in different areas, different relationships. It's affecting people within their own families. It's affecting people in relationships with friends, with co-workers, and then say with medical professionals. So there's a range, there's a spectrum here of different areas where stigma is causing problems and all probably need to be handled in different ways. But I think that the common thing between them is the lack of understanding on the part of others. Lack of understanding both about what it means to have the condition, but also lack of understanding about the impact that the condition is having on people's everyday lives. So, for example, if we look at within a family where you would probably expect to feel the maximum support and have the best understanding because these are the people that are closest to us, but both for neurological conditions as a whole, and it was also true for MS, that people found a lack of understanding there. So even though those people in our family will have a better understanding of what it means to have the condition, they are not appreciating the severity and the impact. A fact that stands out to me is that we asked how people would respond to the statement, "My family can sometimes make me feel like I'm exaggerating about my condition." And over 40% of people who are affected by MS strongly agreed with that statement, which is quite sad and quite worrying. So I think that in all those relationships, be it within family or with friends or in a workplace, it's going to come back to improving people's understanding both of the condition and of how it affects people and how the symptoms that people can see aren't the only symptoms that people are being affected by, and that we need to have better understanding of things like the fatigue, the effect on cognition and so on. So better awareness, and better awareness is going to come from both from education and training, but also I think empowering people to be able to speak confidently about their condition and to explain in a way that is going to be best understood.
Would you say that the cultural differences would have an impact on how stigma is experienced by the individuals?
Yeah, I would, absolutely. It's not something that we looked at specifically in this survey, but it would be something that would be very interesting to look at because, of course, across different countries, different parts of the world, but certainly even within Europe, cultural differences are going to have an impact. There are different beliefs, different levels of understanding about neurological conditions, such as MS. And there's varying degrees of sort of myths and misconceptions about conditions. So I think it would be interesting to look at how that varies between countries.
I think that's even more, like even within one country, when we look at the minorities and the different population you're coming from, demographic population you're coming from, stigma can be difficult, depending also how your own community is open, let's say, to the disease or to even have this discussion with you or to just maybe isolate you further because of the condition. And I think that's an important point that to keep in mind for when we interact with the different individuals. And here, I guess, for more personal insight, maybe I will get back to Anna there on your side. When you looked at the results of the survey, what were your thoughts on this?
I was really in shock when I saw that 87% of people living with MS suffering from a stigma, but even more surprised with the 40% not being understood by their families. Because at the end of the day, like, families can be the closest people to you or like, or maybe close friends. So this percentage is really high. And it makes, when you see these numbers, the patient organizations that advocate for patients' rights, you see that have a really important message to work with. And it's nice that we are here today raising awareness for a stigma and more focus on young people as well. Because living with MS or a related condition when you are a young person is not that easy. And I'm sure that, as Elizabeth was mentioning, it has an important impact on employment and relationships. That's why, Emma, I wanted to ask you, if you have ever felt discriminated or stigmatized because of your MS, or if you have heard about anyone in your environment that has experienced a similar situation?
Thanks, Anna. Me being the nerd that I am, thanks for your question. I went back to the roots of what stigma came from. And it comes from when enslaved people had symbols burned onto their skin. And it sort of is this judgment of a false belief and a prejudice about who you are because of your health condition, or it could be because you're LGBT or you're from a different culture. And I suppose, to be frank, yes, I have experienced the prejudice that comes with stigma from having a health condition. And when it comes to responding to that, one of the major ways that we as people with a neurological condition, people with a health condition, specifically as a young person when I was diagnosed, it's not so long ago now, Anna, our mental health is so fundamental to how we tackle the response from other people. We cannot change the world. We cannot change other people's necessary reactions to us. But by building up our own mental health and our own well-being, a lot of MS organizations and your local MS societies will have counseling and therapy subsidies available to young people, especially, and to people diagnosed with MS. And I really would encourage people to reach out to societies for that. But in my many, many years now with it, living with it, people cannot be changed, but you can always work on yourself and you can always build up your own ability to respond to how people are behaving towards you.
I love the message that you said, that you cannot control what others are going to say, but you can try to control your feelings and your reactions. So it's important to give yourself the focus.
Yeah.
And then try to educate others and raise awareness.
It's also not our job to teach grown adults how to behave either.
That's true.
You know, and I think as young people living with a health condition, we often think, oh, it's my job to tell everybody all about this condition. It isn't. It is your job to live your life and to fulfill all your dreams. That is your only purpose.
That's
true. You know
what
I mean? In life, that for any of us.
I completely agree.
You know,
if I can just say to whatever you're just saying, because I think I found it very interesting. It's a different approach that, because we try with the service, the results.
Oh, of course. Excuse me. I'm speaking on an individual. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's our organizations. Yeah.
But I would like, these are two very strong positions to have, and how to combine that is something that we also need to maybe address here. It's because we always push for more data to be able to say, okay, there is an issue, to understand where the issue is coming from. But it's also to empower the individuals, as you are saying, to understand that they are not going to be able to change the world, but they will be having enough information and to build their confidence that they are not alone in this, that they are other people. And then by, even if it's a small sphere of influence that they have, they can influence it. And they can influence it with their behavior, with the way they are accepting, in a way, what's going on. And I think that the acceptance is quite a strong step. We need to accompany them. And I guess this is also with EFNA, what they are trying to do. If I'm not, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of EFNA because Elizabeth is here to do that. But it's really important to empower the individuals with those messages. Like, you know, you're not supposed to change the world, which is great knowing the world that we are living in these days. But there is still hope for you. And that comes with empowerment and education that we can probably bring in. But that's a very, very nice two different, like, organizational and individual perspective, and how to bring that together and make sense of it also would be great. Maybe, Elizabeth, you want to add to that from the EFNA perspective?
Yeah, well, I love what Emma has said there, and I do fully see that. Of course, it's no one's responsibility to be educating people around them. But then at the same time, there are moments when it's needed and when it's good to feel strong enough to explain, to get. And I'm thinking one of the biggest areas where that's come out is in communications with healthcare professionals. Because, again, here's a group who we expect, who should have a very good understanding but it's simply showing that that's not the case. For, I think, overall for neurological conditions, 74% of people responded to us that they didn't receive adequate treatment because a medical professional didn't believe the severity of their symptoms. For MS, 62% said that a medical professional hadn't believed the extent or severity of their symptoms, and 57% felt that they didn't receive adequate or appropriate treatment, which is really staggering statistics. So again, I would say there's two things that need to happen here. One, the really big one, is that we need to improve the understanding of the medical professionals. So they need to have better education, both in terms of understanding the full spectrum of symptoms that could be before them, but also in listening, in really listening to what patients are saying when they're before them, to not making assumptions, to giving people the time to communicate. But then I think that we need to help people living with conditions to be best able to communicate what they're experiencing, because there's obviously a gap here. And if we can improve health literacy on both sides, we should hopefully be able to have speedier diagnosis, have improved access to treatments faster, and that's only going to lead to better health outcomes for everybody.
Thank you, Elizabeth, for this very good reminder. In terms of health literacy, indeed, there is a need, and we need to keep working on this to make sure that we spread the word in a way. Going back to maybe one question I had in mind is, like, as an individual, was there a moment that you could describe was when you got that confidence that you don't have to change the world around you and that you are taking things into your own hands? What was the journey for you to come to that kind of vision?
Thanks for the question, Elizabeth. It was a journey. It was lots of little steps and lots of steps back as well along the same path. Back to what Elizabeth from EFNA has said is the importance of patient organizations. And it was my involvement with my national MS society. That's really a message for people out there, is to get involved with your national MS society and sign up there. But it was at an EMSP young people's event a long time ago, and realizing that there are lots of people, lots of young people at the time diagnosed with MS who were going through similar experiences as me. It's part of who I am, is to get people together and connect people. And I run a meetup group here in Dublin that has been going for 15 years now this year. And when I was thinking about stigma, I think solidarity is a great antidote to stigma. You know, you don't have to explain everything about your MS, about the fatigue to people. You just are sitting there and you are you and you are with your people, and together you can build something brilliant or just have a chat, you know what I mean? And you can also use that little bit of encouragement to get involved with EMSP organizations, to get involved with EFNA, the surveys, because your voice is really important. And I think when we are told that when we're diagnosed, it really pulls the rug out from under us. You know, you're young, you're supposed to be going this way, and then the doctor has told you, actually, it's like they spin you around and send you another way. Whereas I think the solidarity with other people with the condition and joining with other organizations and playing your part, for me, that has been fundamental to how well, inverted commas, I've been dealing with this diagnosis.
Thank you, Emma, for this like very individual perspective, but that brings some key notions for us to also build and to look around for solidarity, for support, to build our network around us to make sure that we can be us, like just be and live the moment. So it's very important. I'm going to jump in back to the survey from EFNA, and also I know you've done quite a number of work about invisible symptoms, but let's go to the visible conditions first. Do you think that having a condition that is more visible leads to a stronger stigma? Or do your survey get into that direction? Do you think that there is more impact because if you have a condition with a more visible stigma?
Based on our surveys, it was the invisible symptoms that were a bigger cause of stigma. However, I would say there are different ways that either invisible or visible symptoms affect people. And so I'm looking at some of the results that are quite different for different conditions. So for stigma overall, although the results are really worrying for MS, it could be seen that they are not so bad as conditions that are more overwhelmingly invisible. So the results for MS were, it was 87% of respondents and 24% very much feeling affected by stigma. But that for chronic pain, that's right up to 100% feeling affected by stigma and 80% feeling very much. And then we move down a scale of some different conditions, say ME, myalgic encephalomyelitis, migraine and headache, and some other conditions that are really more completely invisible. And they reported stronger stigma overall. But then for conditions where there are more visible or physical symptoms, such as MS, there are areas that are much more problematic. And I'm looking at one which was on the financial implications of having a condition. And whereas overall, across neurological conditions, 30% of people reported that they have been denied insurance or a mortgage, which is a terrible problem, that goes right the way up to 50% of people who are affected by MS. So that is a discrimination that is affecting one disease area very differently to other disease areas. So different types of discrimination, I think, whereas perhaps with the invisible side, it's a more subtle type of stigma in terms of unkindness from people. But there's a really clear impact on people when it comes to things like being denied insurance for people who are affected by physical symptoms.
Thank you for this. It's really interesting to see this works. And also because there is, I guess, this difference between stigma and discrimination that also is very clear here that I think is important to mention for our audience to really make sure that they grasp what we are talking about in terms of the impact it can have and the consequence of the different conditions or the progression of the disease. Because MS is something that's also a disease that progresses in some cases and that the individual needs to adapt to that progression and the perception of the people around them that changes. So the question would be, and maybe more specifically for Emma as a person with MS, and maybe Anna also can bring some of her perspective on this in terms of the, have you feel like people are treating you differently because of your symptoms when you have more visible symptoms that are showing up? Or do you feel that there is different ways that you're dealing yourself also with people when you feel that your MS is more visible or more noticeable for the people outside?
Go ahead, Anna.
I always like to say that I'm a lucky person. Starting thinking of the people that I have around me. And that, of course, I'm at that stage, my symptoms are not disabling. So what happens to me is that people around me forget that I have MS until I don't go to the hospital and it's like, oh, it's true, you have MS, you need to go to the hospital every 6 weeks, that it's quite often. And then after going to the hospital, I'm not feeling that good for some days. Or also, sometimes it happens when I have fatigue, it's like, oh, you have fatigue because you have MS. But it's not only the people around me who forget, sometimes I also forget. It's a bit curious, but it happens to me. But as I said, I'm lucky and I have really supportive people around me and that they make things smoother and easier. But Emma, turning to you, what's your experience when having invisible symptoms?
I think when symptoms are invisible, in my experience, fatigue would have been and is, it has sort of reared its head again for me. But fatigue in the workplace, when you're doing your job, and I was fortunate in the employer at the time, I was able to use a couch, you know, when I needed to take a nap in the afternoon, you know, and I also had, I use things like a meditation app, you know, to be able to block out the sounds of the office. And also just to take that rest. And I'm lucky that that's the amount of time I need to feel refreshed and to be able to continue the day. More recently, I've started to use a wheelchair. And I've been using a walking aid, a walking stick for the past, I think it's probably about 2 or 3 years. And definitely there's been a big change in how, because it's visible, it's now visible that I have a health condition. It's really challenging. It's really challenging how people can react, good or bad, because it's sometimes the pity. For me, pity is a difficult reaction to deal with from people. Pity matched with ignorance is worse, because people can be very dismissive of you as a person, and they see a walking aid and they make assumptions about who you are and what you... Well, first of all, overall, they make assumptions about you. And I think that is hugely problematic for us. As individuals, nobody likes to have something put on them in terms of our identities. We don't like to be told who we are as people. But for some reason, when you use a walking aid or you use a wheelchair, people tell you who you are and they tell you what you need. And it's been a whole difficult thing to deal with. So yes, people do treat you differently. Some people treat you just the same, and other people are helpful. And I live in Dublin, and people in Ireland are known for being kind and welcoming. And I think I've been surprised at people's kindness, actually. Almost sometimes I'm almost expecting. I can deal with a fight nearly. I can deal with that. But people can be so kind. And it's almost like all they need is a reason to help and they will. You know, and I don't want to be all fluffy clouds and sparkles and everything.
But Emma, can I just ask you, because you're saying that, and I'm just saying, are you saying they need a visible reason to help?
Somebody referred to the times we live in, and I think people are hesitant more than ever to get involved with strangers. It's quite twisted. You know, I don't know if it's twisted good or twisted bad, but it's twisted. You know, I think people sometimes do need a visible sign to be helpful. Yes.
So moving on maybe to the invisible conditions and more focusing on that, maybe. Do you think, again, maybe from starting with Elizabeth, your perspective about how can the healthcare system better address the invisible symptoms and be a little bit more supportive of the people with invisible conditions? Do you have any recommendations that came out of your consultation with the communities?
I think it goes back to something that we've touched on earlier, and that would be a need for improved education and training. So we need better understanding among healthcare professionals. We need them to understand the complexity of neurological conditions such as MS, that symptoms are not always necessarily outwardly visible, and that symptoms vary day to day, month to month. They need to not necessarily make assumptions based on what they are seeing in front of them on a particular day. So having a better, deeper understanding of conditions is going to be really important within healthcare systems as a whole, I think.
I totally agree with what you were saying and thinking about invisible conditions. And I don't know if you have experienced this, but sometimes I try to find like the funny thing of situations. And my favorite sentence that I have experienced when saying that I have fatigue is that, oh, we all feel tired sometimes. It's like, now it has arrived a point that I just laugh and say, yes, sometimes depending on my level of energies, I can just try to, what we were saying before, try to raise awareness. But sometimes it's like, yes, yes, we are both tired. I don't know if you have ever experienced that, a similar situation, or that your invisible symptoms weren't taken seriously by others.
Yes, I have. And absolutely not taken seriously. And also, don't we all get tired sometimes? You know, and this diminishing that you have a diagnosed brain condition, and it is really has these repercussions in our bodies, and somebody is very dismissive of it. And Anna, I also think it's really good to put a boundary down, especially if you're in a professional situation, to say, actually, I need to rest and I need this accommodation so I can complete and do my job. You know, so sometimes it can go ha 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 with everybody else. But other times it's really important to put down the boundary and to say, this has a massive impact on how I am living. And these accommodations, I need them so I can carry on with my life. And so there are times, they would certainly be less now, that I would be tolerant of that. But it's, as both Elizabeths were saying, the seriousness of brain health conditions and of neurological conditions can be so easily dismissed, whether by others or, Elizabeth, as you were saying about healthcare professionals, I'm not saying that they're dismissing people's symptoms, but I think it's important that we all acknowledge the seriousness of it, you know, and how difficult it can be for an individual to come back to a response that minimizes how they're feeling.
I think both Anna and you are making a very good point here. And I just wanted to step in to say, like, this discussion or this communication with the people and the reaction is something that sometimes, if it's not said, we don't realize. And I've learned with working with the MS community about this. I have to say, before that, I wouldn't have thought about this, and I would have the same reaction with Anna was describing here. I will try to relate to a condition saying, oh, how can I relate? And it's fatigue, so we all have fatigue. And, you know, you try to get there in a way. It's totally misguided, and it's something that if we are not made conscious of it, we won't realize. And I think for the general public, it seems to be so natural. And I think we experienced that, Emma, when we worked on the employment topic, when we were discussing with company and the HR departments and everything that they label normal, which is not, like, it's normal for us. Even this word, is that something that we shouldn't be using for someone who has a condition? It's just a condition. Without or with a condition, everyone is normal. So this is the type of things that even for people who don't have a conditions, they are not made aware of. It's not part of our general education, how to deal with this. So I think it's important that we raise the voice, that we, at a very young age, that even in schools, we educate the people about these conditions and about how to behave towards one another. This is lost in our education system in many countries. Not everywhere, but still, I guess in terms of best practice, for example, the UK is quite good in terms of visibility of those different conditions and how to be more inclusive. But in other countries, it's completely out of sight, out of mind. We don't know how to interact. And so it can be very dangerously not smart the way we respond to someone with a chronic condition. So it's important to talk about this and to make people aware of that.
Your point about education and about getting us, when as humans, young, when we're in school, it's the ableist idea. It's the idea that we're all going to be the same. Nothing is ever going to change. Our bodies are always going to be perfect and 100% healthy. But also, if you're disabled in any way, you're lesser. And I think it's certainly, it is such a joy to raise children in this modern world, when I've very young children who have experience with other disabled people, not just their mum, and it's part of who they are and part of their friends group. And there has been a slow change over the centuries to a greater level of acceptance of the very different experiences as humans that we have. But it doesn't come because it was given. It comes because it was taken by other people living with health conditions, demanded the rights and the acknowledgement and the respect. And I think as organisations, as EMSP and EFNA, do this work of surveying stigma, of surveying attitudes, I think it has a hugely powerful impact on those of us in these other communities trying to deal with the day-to-day living.
Now we have, like, from my perspective, patient organizations need to try to raise awareness and educate the public, but also we hope that children that are being raised can just have this message more included in their learning journeys, or that they don't need to be taught because they can live it. As now, probably we have, like, through social media, we have more access to people living with disabilities, for example, sharing their own journeys. So maybe it's more reachable for children or teenagers to see these kind of experiences, because sometimes maybe when we were younger, we didn't have access. If anyone from our environment had a visible or invisible disability, we didn't have access to these, to people with disabilities. So social media has many things that might not be okay, but it's also an opportunity in this scenario, I think,
I just like there to really agree with that. And as you say, there, it's not all good in relation to social media, but there is a lot of good. And talking about having better understanding and from a younger age, traditional forms of media have never been good at representing society as society truly is. Because how many of the TV programs that we watch, through the films that we watch, you know, we're not seeing anybody with MS. We're not seeing anybody with different neurological conditions. It's incredibly rare to see people with disabilities represented in those programs. It's like a standout, unusual thing if there is. So as you say, new media, social media that people are using and now, that is a benefit, that it's given a platform to people to speak, to be themselves, and to be seen. So that is a good thing.
Totally. And patient organizations, that's what we are trying. So with the Young People's Network of EMSP, we are trying to raise awareness of MS and related conditions with a special approach to young people. So we hope to continue raising awareness and just sharing information and experiences of our really nice community.
This is really a nice learning opportunity for us to really tap into what we've heard here, to see that there's still a lot that we can do as organizations, but also as individuals, and that to use the means that are at our hands here to be able to spread the good words, but also raise awareness on how, and not necessarily saying like we need to give lessons to people so that they will be better. But what can we do to influence changes around us, even if it's small changes as employers, as educators, as just family members? How can we improve ourselves to make everyone feel welcome, feel included in the different activities, and making sure that if there is a need for further support, we can work together on this. So I will count on EFNA's further service to build on and to build the MSP's work. But like Emma, to also share your stories and contribute to sharing what can be done, what are the strategies that you're using to cope with those different challenges, so we can influence others.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Let's end with a fun rapid fire round. I will just ask you some questions and you need to answer with the first thing that pops up in your mind, okay? First question, oat milk or regular milk?
Regular.
I didn't understand. You said it just at the same time and I didn't understand either of you.
It was oat milk for Emma and regular for Elizabeth.
Okay, too much. You were completely synchronized.
We Irish were synced.
We could notice it.
They were on the same time zone.
Yeah. Okay. Next question. One word to describe a stigma.
Well, the word that came to my head is regrettable.
Heavy.
Yeah. I think it's a difficult question just to, in one word, try to describe it. Elizabeth from EMSP, do you have any word to describe it?
Vision.
So next question. What would you say to a person who doesn't see a disability in another person?
In one word?
No, that's, you can use more. Not the 20, but like more words if you want.
Well, I'm thinking about what Emma said earlier. And if somebody, you know, if somebody is willfully not seeing it, then I'm not sure that I would say anything unless it was a situation where I needed to advocate for myself. But as Emma said, it's not for us to generally educate someone who is not open to that. But if it's a case that we know that this is someone who just doesn't have the understanding, then I would discuss, you know, personally, I'm coming from a different chronic condition. I have chronic migraine, and I would try to explain to people really how what that means for my life and how that is not a case of just having a headache. But I would choose the people that I have those discussions with.
Yeah, just to make sure that you don't somehow lose your energy explaining or time explaining to others. Absolutely. that they don't want to understand what you're trying to say.
I would tell them what I need. This is what I need. You can't give me that. This is what I need. And if they can't give it, that's fine.
I think I would have like two answers. Sorry, Anna, just to say, like for someone that, and that's the example we see everywhere now, someone that comes to you because you're on a disabled parking spot and they don't see you that you need that parking spot. I would say, like, I would align with what Elizabeth and Emma were saying and just say back off. Like, don't spend time explaining. But then if it's someone in another circumstances that you see there is some potential there, I would say, let's have a coffee. Let's sit together and talk, because there is a need to talk. But there are two different, really, to be able to identify the circumstances where there is a space for education and where there is there is no space and there is no time and energy to be wasted. So just back off.
Yeah, it's important to balance the time and energy levels sometimes. Okay, and we have our last question and a small action that we all could take to reduce a stigma.
I think listen. We need to listen to people. Listen, it's general. I need to listen better to my children. I need to listen better to... But in this situation, we need to listen to people who are stigmatized. They have been prejudged and something has been put upon them. We need to listen to people with MS, and we need to especially listen to young people with MS growing up in the world they're growing up in.
I would say not make assumptions, because we are all guilty of that, but we need to try harder to not make assumptions about anyone either already in our lives or anybody who we meet. We wait until we truly get to know a person before we make judgments or decide our opinion of them.
I think after this episode, the four of us and also our audience have some homework, and in general is to try to listen more and better, because sometimes we listen but we don't proceed the information that has to be perceived, and also don't make assumptions to important messages. Okay, so that wraps up this episode of Let's Talk MS. A big thank you for Elizabeth and Emma. It was a pleasure to have you here today. I wish that our conversation had lasted for more time, because
we'll have to get a coffee together.
We will need to have this coffee, because it was really interesting and inspiring to talking with both of you. This discussion has made us think about the stigma in discrimination that people with MS or related conditions can face, like from unknown people, but also in your like comfort environment. And we have also learned how visible conditions and invisible disabilities can lead people to disbelieve your condition. Last month, we had an incredible time at the EMSP Annual Conference. If you miss it, don't worry. You can check out the highlights on our website and social media. And you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, EUMS Platform. Before we go, I would also like to highlight an important moment. On the International Day of Persons with Disabilities 2024, and follow us on our Instagram and Twitter accounts at EUMSYouth. Until next time.